Hey, you're listening to PTO Junction on CILU Radio, 102.7 FM in Thunder Bay, and around the world at luradio.ca. And if you're listening on a Sunday night, PTO Junction will continue for another half hour. If you're listening on a weekday afternoon, that is the end of the show. And we have one more song. Have a great evening, everyone, and if you're listening on Sunday night, stay tuned.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming. The archer split the tree. A fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon.
My name is Nevaeh. I lost my foot in a lawnmower accident. Now I teach other children how to play safe. Kids shouldn't play near lawnmowers. Lawnmowers are very loud. The driver wouldn't be able to hear you if you were playing anywhere near. It's very important to be cautious.
Whatever game you play, play safe.
A message from the War Amps. Learn more at waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Good morning. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Joshua with It's Pretty Trivial. Thanks for tuning in this week. Hopefully everyone had a good week. Hopefully everyone stayed safe with all the rising cases of the coronavirus here in Thunder Bay. And try not to travel. Maybe cut down on who you're seeing and what you're doing. And just remember that we've now gone into a yellow zone here in the city. So be careful out there. Try and go out as minimally as possible and stay safe. And don't forget to wear a mask and wash your hands regularly. That disclaimer out of the way, I'd really like to talk about what today's topic is going to be. So, originally I was just going to do the digital revolution. But I think I should go through all the ages and then end off talking a little bit about the digital revolution and kind of some facts and kind of how it works, you know, what is digital, how do our digital computers or radios, phones, how does all that kind of work in kind of a little bit more basic, but a little basic, but technical way. Instead of just saying, oh yeah, this is this and this is kind of how it works, I'd like to get a little more into the nitty gritty. And talk a little bit more about it, as I think there's some interesting things about some of it. So without further ado, let's get started. Now, this starts, the timeline I'm using is from, well, first one's from timelineindex.com. And it is mentioning all the kind of different eras. And some of them I might just breeze over, and some of them I may talk a little bit about. The first is 140,000 million years ago, or 14 billion years ago, approximately, with the Big Bang. Sorry, 14,000 million years, or 14 billion. And the Big Bang was the formation of the universe. Now, the Big Bang is still a heavily, debated upon topic, even in the science community. Definitely happened, or at least they think it happened. They just don't know the specifics, but they are working to figure it out. It said that the Big Bang just kind of started as an infinitely dense spot that kind of just became something. In less than a second, the whole universe was formed. There is an idea that, well, the universe itself, you know, you wouldn't even have had in the first Planck second, which is the shortest meaningful amount of time, in those short amount of seconds, you know, everything would go from just a hot plasma of nothing, and or everything just kind of separated nothing into, you know, molecules, electrons, neutrons, protons, neutrons, and electrons weren't into atoms yet. But within seconds of the universe forming, all of that happened. And the universe started forming planets and stars and galaxies, and the universe, well, was formed. Now, at 4,600 million years ago, or about 4.6 billion years, the Earth formed. Now, which planet are we in line? Which planet are closer to us, or closer to the sun than us? And what is a few other, you know, what is Earth's density and largeness compared to the other planets? Now, Earth is the third planet from the sun, Mercury and Venus being the two closest, respectively. And it's also the densest and fifth largest of all eight planets in the solar system. It's also the largest of our terrestrial planets. And, of course, what is it sometimes referred to? The blue planet or the blue marble. There's a few different terms for it. Now, the Earth is very interesting in a lot of different ways. But I didn't know this, that it was the densest, until just recently. And I think that's a pretty good fact for anyone that's curious about the solar system. And by terrestrial planets, it means planets that can be walked on, not gas giants. Now, when Earth means it's the densest, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're the biggest or we're anything special. It just means because we're so rocky, because the Earth's so rocky, it's all just rock inside the core, and it's very dense. Especially because it's mostly solid or liquid. Whereas something like Saturn, which is the least dense, the majority of the planet is, well, a gas. And, of course, we all know a gas is not very dense. So that is how Earth comes ahead of all the other planets for being so dense. Because density doesn't necessarily refer to size. Again, you're taking the size of the planet and you're trying to figure out what is its mass per unit volume. Now, a planet like Jupiter might weigh an enormous amount more than Earth, but per unit it would be much, much less dense than Earth, just because of the way it works out. Now, the next I want to talk about is kind of the first major period, which is 541 million years to 485 million years. And it was the explosion of life on Earth. When was this? This was in the Cambrian era. It's the first geological period of the Paleozoic era. And it's succeeded by the Ordovician. Its subdivisions and indeed its base are somewhat in flux. Now, the next one is from 299 million years ago to 252 million years ago. It's a geological period and system which is the last period of the Paleozoic era. Following the Carboniferous period and preceding the Triassic period of the Mesozoic era. Now, this was important because this is the Permian period, and this was the largest mass extinction. The next one is what led rise to the dinosaurs from 252 million years ago to 66 million years ago. It is an interval of geological time from 252 to 66 million years ago. And it's also called the Age of Reptiles, which was introduced in the 19th century by paleontologist Gideon Mantell. And they viewed it as dominated by reptiles. Now, of course, this is also because the Mesozoic period is when the dinosaurs lived. So, of course, there's going to be lots of reptiles. The Mesozoic period is probably one that we all love, with all, you know, the dinosaurs, you know, the T-Rex and all the other cool ones. But that led to, in 66 million years ago, a period which actually is meaning is new life. And it's the current and most recent of the three Phanerozoic geological eras, which follows the Mesozoic and covers a period from 66 million years ago to the present. It's known as the Age of Mammals. And it's the Cenozoic period. Now, those were kind of not that interesting, and they were kind of a long time ago. And even for me, they weren't that interesting. But the next ones is really where I want to start talking a little bit about. First being from about 5 million years ago to about 2500 BC. The first species of the genus Homo, which evolved in South and East Africa in the late Pliocene or early Pleistocene, was really a very important. It was kind of the rise of the homonyms. Sorry, the homonyms, which were kind of all the humans. You know, you had your Homo Neanderthalus, Homo erectus, Homo sapien, all the human beings. And it was the Stone Age, kind of the time of the cavemen. And this is kind of the big time of when humans rise. And when we start, you know, leaving the trees and making things like tools. You know, you find a rock in the forest and you need to use a rock, then you use a rock. You know, make an axe and then use the axe to cut down a tree with that rock. Now, the next one I'm going to talk about is one that is from 108,000 BC to about 10,000 BC. And it's the last glacial period, which has a popular name. And was the most recent glacial period within the current ice age, occurring during the last year of the Pleistocene. Now, this is important because it caused an extinction of a lot of large what? It was a big extinction of large mammals, probably which include the mammoth. It's commonly known as the Ice Age. Now, scientists consider the Ice Age to be merely the latest glacial event in a much larger Ice Age, one that dates back to over 2 million years and had seen multiple glaciations. From the point of human archaeology, it falls in the Paleolithic and Mesolithic periods. And when the glacial event started, Homo sapiens were confined to Africa and used tools comparable to those used by Neanderthals in Europe and the Levant by Homo erectus in Asia. Near the end of the event, Homo sapiens spread into Europe, Asia, and Australia. And the retreat of the glaciers allowed groups of Asians to migrate to America and populate it. The next period, we already kind of talked about, well, the Stone Age. But again, it's where humans created used tools from stone. Wood, bones, and other materials would also be used. But stone, which in particular flint, was shaped to be used as cutting tools and weapons. Now, it's kind of ambiguous. So it's kind of just Stone Age, main Stone Age, until we encountered technologically developed cultures. But it's believed to be around 2 to 5 million years ago. And it began the first human or pre-human tool making. Was followed by another common era. Now, this common era is right, we're going to talk about after we talk about this other important event. Now, during this era, or the New Stone Age, it was a period of development of human technology, and beginning about 10,200 BC to about 4,500 BC, in some parts of the Middle East and in other parts of the world, and ending kind of around 4,500 BC and 2000 BC, it's traditionally considered part of the last part of the Stone Age. And it followed the terminal Holocene Epipaleolithic period and commenced the beginning of farming, which produced a Neolithic Revolution, which is the name of the age. It ended when metal tools became widespread, or in some geographical regions, instead of the age we're about to talk about, a different age which we'll talk about soon. It's a progression of behavioral and cultural characteristics and changes, and it included the use of wild and domestic crops and domesticated animals. Now, this culture is considered to be in the Levant, Jericho, modern-day West Bank. And that's where the beginning of this culture was started. Now, this is the Neolithic period and involved some of the first permanent settlements. This is important because this is when humans really started to kind of take over the planet. And it gave rise to an important age that I was talking about a few minutes ago and just mentioned quickly, which was the Bronze Age. And it's usually characterized by the use of bronze, proto-writing, and other early features of urban civilization. Now, it's the second principal period of the three-age stone, bronze, iron system. And it was proposed in modern time by who? By Christian Jurgensen Thompson for classifying and studying ancient societies. An ancient civilization is defined to be in the Bronze Age either by smelting its own copper and alloying it by tin, or by trading for bronze from production areas elsewhere. Copper tin ores are rare, as reflected by the fact that there were no tin bronzes in Western Asia before trading in bronze began in the 3rd millennium BC. Worldwide, the Bronze Age is generally followed by the Neolithic period, but in some parts of the world, the Copper Age served as a transition from the Neolithic to the Bronze Age. And although the Iron Age generally followed the Bronze Age, in some areas, the Iron Age intruded directly on the Neolithic from outside the region, with the exception of sub-Saharan Africa, where it developed independently. Bronze Age cultures differed in their development of the first writing. And a lot of early writing systems kind of rose during the Bronze Age, which was from about 3300 BC to about 1200 BC. And of course, the thing that followed was the Iron Age. And it usually occurs after the Bronze Age, and, well, by the prevalent use of iron. And it's kind of characterized by the widespread use of iron or steel. And the adoption of the materials coincide with other changes in society, including differing agricultural practices, religious beliefs, and artistic styles. The Iron Age is an archaeological term, indicates a condition as to civilization and culture of the people using iron as a material for cutting tools and weapons. Now, the Iron Age is the third principal period of the three-age system. It is also important as that is kind of the rise of a lot of important historical archaeology. Ancient literature of the Iron Age includes the earliest texts preserved in manuscript tradition. Sanskrit and Chinese literature flourish in the Iron Age. Other texts include the Avestan Gathas, the Indian Vedas, and the oldest parts of the Hebrew Bible. The principal feature that distinguishes the Iron Age from the preceding ages is the introduction of alphabetic characters and the development of written language. This was very important. Humans really start to move forward in this period. And right after the Iron Age, from about 323 BC to 31 BC, You have the Hellenistic periods, which was part of ancient Greek and Eastern Mediterranean history. Between the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC and the emergence of the Roman Empire, as signified by the Battle of Actium in 31 BC and the subsequent conquest of the Ptolemaic Egypt in 30 BC. At this time, Greek cultural influence and power was at its peak in Europe, Africa, and Asia, and experiencing prosperity and progress in the arts, exploration, literature, theater, architecture, music, mathematics, philosophy, and science. And it's often considered a period of transition. Sometimes even of decadence and degeneration, compared to the brilliance of the Greek classical era. This is when you get a lot of, you know, your famous Greek philosophers and scientists like Aristotle and Plato, or just before this, and it's the rise of the Greeks. And of course, like I mentioned before, it's the rise of the Roman Empire, or the Roman period, from about 31 BC to 476 BC. Just a quick reminder, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. Now, the Roman Empire was a post-republican period of ancient Rome civilization, and it was characterized by the autocratic form of government, headed by an emperor, and large territorial holdings around the Mediterranean Sea in Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia Minor. The 500-year-old republic, which preceded it, had been severely disestablished through a series of civil wars and political infighting in the Senate. And several events marked the transition of power from the Roman Senate to an autocratic emperor. Julius Caesar's appointment as perpetual dictator in 44 BC after his victory over Pompey resulted in, well, of course, his assassination and triggered a power vacuum, which led to the succession of conflicts between supporters of Caesar and the Senate. And Octavian, who was Caesar's adoptive son, defeated Mark Antony and Cleopatra in the Battle of Actium in 31 BC after inheriting Caesar's estates. Following Antony and Cleopatra's suicides and the annexation of the Ptolemaic Empire in 30 BC, the Roman Senate granted the honorific title Augustus to Octavian 3 years later in 27 BC, effectively bringing the end to the Roman Republic. Now, this is important because this is the rise of the Roman Empire. But just quickly, I'd like to mention a few things. As I have studied a lot of this time period in history just for fun, and I've seen quite a few documentaries and other stories about it. And what happened was you had a lot of major wars and civil wars happening right before Caesar. And then Caesar comes in. However, quick side note, a fun fact that apparently, now I believe this is true, but I could be partially wrong. In Julius Caesar's day, there was no J's in Latin, and there was no soft C's in Latin. So instead of Julius Caesar, it would have been pronounced Julius Caesar, which I think is almost a better name than Julius Caesar. But that's just a fun fact. Now, Caesar was very important in the shaping of the Roman Empire. Now, Julius Caesar was the first kind of person to help this transition, but he technically did not actually become a Roman emperor in that sense. Julius Caesar ended up becoming very powerful and got into something called the First Triumvirate with himself, Pompey, and there was another Crassus, who the three of them became the leaders of, kind of ran Rome together as the three most powerful men. What happened, though, was the men saw how powerful Caesar was getting and were worried about him. So they kind of forced him to leave and told him, when your time's up of being consul, which is kind of like a kind of the leader of the Senate, it's kind of like almost a prime minister sort of deal, and it was elected by the people to kind of make all the laws, and then the Senate votes on them. Caesar was forced out by Pompey and Crassus, and they told him, you can be governor of somewhere. So he decides to be governor of Gaul, which is modern day France. And then he launches a campaign to take over Gaul. Now, Crassus was annoyed because he wanted to be a big leader, but it wasn't working out for him. So he went on his own campaign and got killed in one of the worst battles in Roman history, I believe. And it was, he went to fight one of them in Western Europe and kind of East Asia. Now, Caesar became very, very powerful and popular, but Pompey did not like it and basically declared him as an enemy of state. But Caesar kind of fought Pompey all the way and defeated him. And then he fled to try and raise arms in Egypt, which led to a major war. And Ptolemy, who is the 15-year-old pharaoh and king, kind of king of Egypt at that point, became, well, he kind of killed Pompey. And then when Caesar came down, imprisoned Caesar, who Cleopatra kind of helped escape, him escape. They kind of ruled together and were lovers and had a child named Caesarion. And then Caesar was killed by Brutus, and the start of the second triumvirate, where basically Brutus and Antony and then I believe Octavian rose to power, and the start of another civil war, eventually leading to Augustus or Octavian taking over and becoming the first emperor of Rome. And I suggest, if you find any of that interesting, to go take a look, as it is actually a very, very long but interesting history. In a span of 50 to 60 years, there was major, major political upheaval in Rome. And it was really a bit, very crazy time. Now, the next time period I want to talk about is from 330 AD to 1453. This is an important time, as it's kind of the time of the Eastern Roman Empire. At this time, Rome and kind of the Roman Empire is split into two, East and West. But before we go on to that, we need to listen to a word from our sponsor. So, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. I'll see you in a minute.
CILU is sponsored in part by the Students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship, an inclusive spiritual community promoting a compassionate, just, and sustainable world. Find them online at luf.ca, on Facebook, or at 129 South Algoma, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. Live from the Rock Folk Festival, bringing the spirit of folk and folk music to Red Rock every August. Keep up to date with upcoming happenings and buy tickets online at livefromtherockfolkfestival.com. The Outpost, Lakehead University's pub, full-service restaurant, and live music venue. Find them on Facebook to stay up to date on all the happenings during the school year, like Tanker Tuesdays and Pub Night Thursdays.
Welcome back. You're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. If you're just joining us now, I welcome you. If you're just coming back from the first half of the episode, welcome back. Thank you for staying tuned. For the break, we were talking about the different time periods, and we had just talked about the Roman Empire and kind of the Bronze Age, Stone Age, Iron Age, and we're going to work our way up to the most modern age. Now, we had ended off with the Eastern Roman, talking about the Eastern and Western Roman Empires after it split. Now, what happened was Rome kind of split into two halves, East and West Roman Empire. After kind of Rome itself kind of fell to pieces. And this was right before the time of, well, this was right after the time of Constantine the Great, who was kind of the person that kind of helped bring in the whole idea of Christianity. And it was really kind of a turning point, as for years the Roman Empire had started to falter, and it was really starting to fall apart. Now, during this time, we're going to talk about the Eastern Roman Empire. It was a predominantly Greek-speaking continuation of the eastern half of the Roman Empire during late antiquity and the Middle Ages. Its capital was not Rome. It was what? And what's its modern-day equivalent? It was Constantinople, which is modern-day Istanbul, originally known as Byzantium, often called the Eastern Roman Empire in this context. It survived the 5th century fragmentation and fall of the Western Roman Empire and continued to exist for an additional 1,000 years until it fell to the Ottoman Turks in 1453. During most of the existence, the empire was the most powerful economic, cultural, and military force in Europe. Both Byzantine Empire and Eastern Roman Empire are historical terms created after the end of the realm, and its citizens referred to their empire as the Roman Empire and called themselves Romans. This is the Byzantine Empire and was still very powerful in its own right back during its time. But during the Byzantine period, you had the Middle Ages from about 476 to 1350. Now, it was the middle period in a schematic division of European history and the three ages: classical civilization, Middle Ages, and modern civilization. It's commonly considered as having lasted from the end of the Western Roman Empire, 5th century, until the rise of national monarchies and the beginning of demographic and economic renewal after the Black Death. European overseas exploration and the cultural revival known as what? Known as the Renaissance around the 15th century, as well as the Protestant Reformation starting in 1517, with a disputation of Dr. Martin Luther on the power and efficacy of indulgences, known as the 95 Theses, challenged the teachings of the church on the nature of penance, the authority of the Pope, and the usefulness of indulgences. And it sparked a theological debate that would result in the birth of the Lutheran, Reformed, and Anabaptist traditions within Christianity. This is kind of the fall of the major Roman Empire, Eastern Roman Empire. And it kind of was falling into different kingdoms run by different kind of kings and queens, local monarchies, and was really kind of the start of more modern Europe. Now, I believe at this time, parts of the Roman Empire still existed, mainly as the Holy Roman Empire. And I believe this was also around the time of Charlemagne. During this time period also would have been things like the Battle of Hastings in England. Now, the next time period I'm about to talk about is probably one of the most well-known of all of them. It's the beginning of the modern age, which is really important in our story to get to what our modern day age is. This age is from the French, meaning rebirth, or from Italian, to be reborn. and it was a cultural movement that spanned the period roughly from the 14th century to the 17th century, from about 1350 to 1600. Beginning in Italy in the late Middle Ages, and later spreading to the rest of Europe. Though availability of paper and the invention of metal movable types sped the dissemination of ideas from the late 15th century, the changes of this age were not uniformly experienced across Europe. What age is this? It's the Renaissance, from French Renaissance, which is rebirth, and Italian Rinascimento, from Renascere, to be reborn, like I had previously said. And this was kind of the rise of kind of a rebirth of classical ideas. It was mainly a cultural movement, and it encompassed innovative flowering of Latin and vernacular literatures, beginning in the 14th century resurgence of learning based on classical sources, which contemporaries called the Petrarch, the development of linear perspective and other techniques of rendering a more natural reality in painting, and gradual but widespread educational reform. In politics, it contributed to the development of conventions of diplomacy, and in science, an increased reliance on observation. Historians often argue this intellectual transformation was a bridge between the Middle Ages and modern history. Although the Renaissance saw revolutions in many intellectual pursuits, as well as social and political upheaval, it's perhaps best known for its artistic developments and contributions of such polymaths as who? Such polymaths as Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo, who inspired the term Renaissance man. There is a consensus that the Renaissance began in what city in the 14th century? Various theories have been proposed to account for its origins and characteristics, focusing on a variety of factors including the social and civil peculiarities of this city at the time, its political structure, its patronage of its dominant family, the Medici, and the migration of Greek scholars and texts to Italy following the fall of Constantinople in the hand of the Ottoman Turks. It started in Florence, Italy. Now, I'm not going to spend too long on this age, as I know many people probably know lots about it, especially with people like Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo, who some of their ideas still live today. And some of that time might even include people like the next age, and the one after it are the important ones for science. Either way, the quick one I want to mention is from the 1517 to 1648. There was a major reformation, and there was a schism between Western Christianity, initiated by Martin Luther, John Calvin, and other early Protestants, which was the idea of the Protestant versus Catholic Church. Although there had been significant attempts to reform before Luther, notably those of John Wycliffe and Jan Hus, the date most usually given for the start of the Protestant Reformation is 1517, when Luther published the 95 Theses, and its conclusion in 1648, when the Peace of Westphalia that ended the European wars of religion. There's a lot more to this, and there's also things like kind of the great schism between the two, like, you know, Roman Catholic and Orthodox, and kind of the big reformation of Christianity itself. The next is a very important time period, which is really one that starts to shape the modern world in an extremely significant way. This is from about 1600 to 1800. See, the age of reason and science, which is known as what? This was the Enlightenment. And it was an intellectual movement in the 18th century Europe. The goal of it was to establish an authoritative ethics, aesthetics, a knowledge based on an enlightened rationale. The leaders viewed themselves as courageous, elite body of intellectuals who were leading the world towards progress. Out of long periods of irrationality, superstition, and tyranny, which began during a historic period called the Dark Ages. This movement provided a framework for the American and French Revolution, as well as the rise of capitalism and the birth of socialism. It is matched by the High Baroque era in music and the neoclassic period in the arts. The boundaries of the Enlightenment are often thought to cover much of the 17th century as well, though other term the previous era the Age of Reason. This is kind of the time of people like Galileo, Newton, and others. This is really when science becomes a big thing. And instead of the sun circling the earth circling the sun, people are looking to the skies, and people are understanding that gravity, how gravity works, and that not everything in religion is as the Bible says it is. And they challenge some of those ideas. The next is probably one of the most important modern ages that some countries may still be going through to this day. It was a period in the 18th century marked by social and technological change, in which manufacturing began to rely on steam power, fueled primarily by coal, rather than animal labor, or on water or wind power, and by a shift from artisans who made complete products to factories in which each worker completed a single stage of the process. Improvements in transportation include the rapid pace of change. The cause of this remains a topic for debate with some historians, and is outgrowth from the social changes of the Enlightenment and the colonial expansion in the 17th century. This began in the English Midlands and spread throughout England and into continental Europe and Northern United States in the 19th century. It's the Industrial Revolution and the start of many things, like the steam engine with Watt. Kind of the starts of things like cars and modern technology. The next we're about to talk to is not that long ago, but is very important. And it's the age of globalization, or the 20th century. And it began on January 1st, 1901, and ended on December 31st, 2000. And it's the 10th and final century of the second millennium. It's distinct from the century known as the 1900s. And it was dominated by a chain of events that heralded significant change in world history and redefine the era: World War I and World War II, nuclear power and space exploration, nationalism and decolonization, the Cold War and post-Cold War conflicts, intergovernmental organizations, cultural homogenization through developments in emerging transportation and communication technology, poverty reduction and world population growth, and so much more. This is not one I want to spend much time on, as it is not that long ago. And even though it ended kind of right as I was being born, it is still one that many probably still know enough about. But the next one I want to talk about is from 2000 to 2099, our current kind of dates. It's the digital revolution. It's the first century of the third millennium. The increasing prevalence of global communication and encounters with other calendars, Islamic calendar, Chinese calendar, Persian calendar, Hebrew calendar, suggests the terms 21st century and third millennium have a substantial cultural bias. Some even suggest the ideas of abandoning centuries, setting the start date back to the beginning of human urbanization in the 4th millennium BC and making it the 7th millennium. Some suggest even adopting a cyclic time model based on global climate change, which is the macro equivalent of the annual seasons. The digital revolution is important in modern day. It's what we are in now. And it's the whole idea of, you know, computers. You know, you can have anything and everything at your fingertips. A phone, a computer, a television. You can call someone from across the planet. Modern technologies no one could have ever dreamed of. All on a digital platform. This is modern day. Now, just a quick reminder, you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. Now, digital technologies have been around a while. But really, even though a lot of it started in the 20th century, 21st century is really when it's become extremely prevalent. And even today, we still have, not everything is digital, as some things are still analog. Which is kind of, you know, the old standard that was probably back in the 1950s and 60s. Term digital itself is something that's expressed as a series of digits, 0 and 1, typically represented by values of a physical quantity, such as a voltage or magnetic polarization. Now, it also means to show time by means of display digits, rather than a hands or a pointer. Something that's analog usually means, you know, that clock. Or, you know, an analog signal. One which kind of used waves, like old radios. Instead of the digital age, which uses zeros and ones. These zeros and ones are important, as they form the binary system. And binary is what everything works off of. Me recording on my computer right this second, I may see everything perfectly fine. For me, I'm using a program that shows nice little waveforms showing what my voice sounds like. As much as it kind of looks like an analog signal, it would be a digital signal, because everything nowadays mostly is. Even audio can become a digital signal now. But I look at it and I say, wow, this is so cool. I can talk into my computer, it knows it, and I understand everything. But if I were to break this down and look over a billion operations in 1 second happen in my computer's processing core at over a gigahertz. Most computers are 2 to 3 gigahertz nowadays. And that's how fast their clock runs. And the computer does 64 bits, is a 64-bit number of two states, on or off, a 1 or a 0. That is binary. And every computer runs off of those 1s and 0s. And if you were to look at what your CPU is reading, it would just be a bunch of gibberish to us. It would just be a bunch of random 1s and 0s that look like they mean nothing. But this is not the case. And nowadays we may not understand it, but the original computers that maybe only were 4 to 8 bits, even 16 bits, it started out with programming and say, hey, an A might be this number, and a B might be this number. And it all was specific ones and zeros that your computer understood very, very well. This all happened because of the transistor, which was kind of like an electric switch, an on or off state, and kind of helped create the logic gates that allowed ones and zeros to be added together in specific ways, which then a computer can go through and do. And that output is the output you're looking for. If you look at most computer diagrams, they involve many gates. And some simple ones are the OR gate, where if you apply an input on either input A or input B, you'll get an output at B or output at C. If A and B are both on, you'll get an output at C. If A is on and B is not, you'll get an output. If B is on and A is not, you'll get an output. There's also the inverted versions of those gates, where it works opposite. You have things like AND gates, which is a... both signals have to be on to have an output. And inverting signals, where, you know, if it's a 1, it'll invert to a 0, or if it's a 0, it'll invert to a 1. These are combined in very complex ways to create things like adders that add numbers together and create the modern system we use today, which runs in binary. But to even start understanding how it may work, you have to understand how binary works. Binary is a 2-bit system. Now, as we all probably know, we use the decimal system most of the time, which is a base 10. Binary is base 2, which means it has two states, on or off, 1 or 0. And say it was a tertiary system instead of a binary system. Tertiary means 3. It would mean it's a 3-bit system. But because of the way it works, for example, base 10 is 0 to 9, not 0 to 10 or 1 to 10. It's the same with binary. It's basically you can take the base, subtract 1 from it, and that's as high as it'll go. Hexadecimal, a base 16 system, goes to 60 minus 1. It has 15 different numbers. 0 to 15 is how many different options you have. That is why binary is just ones and zeros. 2 to the 0 is 1. 2 to the 1 is 2. 2 to the 2 is 4. 2 to the 3 is 8. This is important because the 0th bit represents the ones column in base 10. 2 to the 1 represents the 2s. So on and so forth. Any number can be represented in binary. It's just more complex. For example, 1001 would equal 9 because the first 1 is the 4th bit. So 2 to the 0, 2 to the 1, 2 to the 2, 2 to the 3. 2 to the 3 is 8 plus 2 to the 0 because the 2 in between is 2 to the 2 and 2 to the 1. Are zeros, you don't need to worry about them. And 2 to the 0 is 1, so you get 8 plus 1 is 9. Another common way to figure out what number you're dealing with and convert from binary to decimal and decimal to binary is to do long division. And long division will give you, well, your number you're looking for. And it can create, even with fractions, can create some pretty interesting numbers. It's pretty cool to see how it works and how these conversions work. And they are quite simple to do. If you look up online, what's this number in decimal, or how do you calculate decimal? It's very, very simple. Adding numbers in decimal isn't even that hard as well. The thing to realize is that a 1 plus a 1 would be, well, a 0. Because 1 plus 1 is 2, which in decimal would be 1, 0. Because you can't have 2 in the ones column. And that's kind of how the decimal system works. There's also another interesting system that helped give rise to the revolution and the digital revolution. That number 6 system is a base 16 known as hexadecimal. And again, to transmit from a binary to a hexadecimal or a decimal to a hexadecimal is you're just doing long division again. Now, hexadecimal goes from number 0 to 9 plus 10 would be A, 11's B, 12 is C, 13 is D, 14 is E, and 15 is F. If anyone, say, used colors in any kind of program, you might have noticed 0X, FFF, FFF. That is a hexadecimal number, where F stands for 15. So really, it's 0x15, 15, 15, 15, 15, 15, 15 in hexadecimal. And that's kind of what it means in the decimal system. It's kind of nice because having the more makes it a little bit easier to understand. But again, it's very similar to the system we were talking about before. And this is another very useful way. And using these binary and decimal binary and hexadecimal systems, they've created things like the ASCII codes. Now, an ASCII table is for American Standard Code for Information Interchange. And it's kind of what all computers and telecommunications use. And it's certain binary bits are programmed to be certain characters. And these characters, well, they really mean something in binary. So when you press A on a